Lord Feringle would surely and horribly kill the man. A daring rescue had never been a part of Morek's plan. Many thieves were sold to adventuring lords, and so he had hoped Lord Feringle would part with this one for a handsome sum, and the lord's own gold at that. But rapists, particularly men who ravished noble women, found only one horrible fate. Morek stared out the window of his small room, looking to Castle Auk and the dark waters beyond. He would try to find some way to get to Wulfgar, but he feared he would be returning to Luskin alone.
Chapter 23. The Second Attempted Justice.
"Here's your last meal, dog,"
said one of the two guards standing outside Wolfgar's cell. The man spat on the food and slipped the tray in through the slot. Wolfgar ignored them and made no move for the food. He could hardly believe that he had escaped execution in Luskin, only to be killed in some nondescript fiefdom. It struck him, then, that perhaps he had earned this. No, he hadn't harmed the woman, of course, but his actions of the last months, since he had left Drizzt and the others in Icewind Dale, since he had slapped Catti Bree across the face, were not those of a man undeserving of such a grim fate. Hadn't Wulfgar and Drizzt killed monsters for the same crimes that Wulfgar had committed? Had the pair not gone into the spine of the world, in pursuit of a giant band that had been scouting out the trail, obviously planning to waylay merchant wagons? What mercy had they shown the giants? What mercy, then, did Wulfgar deserve? Still, it bothered the big man more than a little, shook what little confidence he had left in justice and humanity, that both in Luskin and in Orkney, he had been convicted of crimes for which he was innocent. It made no sense to him. If they wanted to kill him so badly, why not just do it for those crimes he had committed? There were plenty of those from which to choose. He caught the last snatches of the guard's conversation as they walked away down the tunnel.
"A wretched child it'll be, coming from such loins as that. It'll tear Lady Miralda apart, with its da so big."
That gave Wulfgar pause. He sat in the dark for a long while, his mouth hanging open. Now it began to make a little more sense to him as he put the pieces of the puzzle together. He knew from the guard's previous conversations that Lord Feringle and Lady Miralda were only recently married, and now she was with child, but not by Lord Feringle. Wulfgar nearly laughed aloud at the absurdity of it all. He had become a convenient excuse for an adulterous noblewoman, a bomb against Lord Feringle's cuckolding.
"What luck," he muttered.
But he understood that more than bad luck had caused his current predicament. A series of bad choices on his part had landed him here in the dark, with the spiders and the stench and the visits of the demon. Yes, he deserved this, he believed. Not for the crimes accused, but for those committed. She couldn't sleep, couldn't even begin to close her eyes. Feringle had left her early and returned to his own room, for she had claimed discomfort and begged him to give her a reprieve from his constant amorous advances. It wasn't that she minded the man's attention. In fact, her lovemaking with Feringle was certainly pleasant, and were it not for the child and the thought of the poor man in the dungeon, it would go far beyond pleasant. Miralda had come to know that her change of heart concerning Feringle was well-founded, that he was a gentle and decent man. She had little trouble looking at Feringle in a fresh way, recognizing his handsome features and his charm, though that was somewhat buried by his years under the influences of his shrewish sister. Miralda could unearth that charm, she knew, could bring out the best in Feringle and live in bliss with a good man. However, the woman found that she could not tolerate herself. How her foolishness had come back to haunt her in the form of the baby in her womb, in the simmering anger within her husband. Perhaps the most bitter blow of all to Miralda was the forthcoming execution of an innocent man, a man who had saved her from the very crime for which he was to be horribly killed. After Wulfgar had been dragged away, Miralda tried to rationalize the sentence, reminding herself that the man was indeed a highwayman, going so far as to tell herself that the barbarian had victimized others, perhaps even raped other women. But those arguments hadn't held water, for Miralda knew better. Though he had robbed her carriage, she'd gotten a fair glimpse into the man's character. Her lie had caused this. Her lie would bring the brutal execution to a man undeserving. Miralda lay late into the night, thinking herself the most horrible person in all the world. She hardly realized that she was moving some time later, padding barefoot along the castle's cold stone floor with a guiding light of a single candle. She went to Temegast's room, pausing at the door to hear the reassuring sounds of the old man snoring, and in she crept. As the steward, Temegast kept the keys to every door in the castle on a large wrought iron ring. Miralda found the ring on a hook above the steward's dresser, and she took it quietly, glancing nervously at Temegast with every little noise. Somehow she got out of the room without waking the man, then skittered across the audience hall, past the servants' quarters and into the kitchen. There she found the trap door leading to the levels below, bolted and barred so strongly that no man, not even a giant, could hope to open it, unless he had the keys. Miralda fumbled with them, trying each until she had finally thrown every lock and shifted every bar aside. She paused, collecting herself, trying to form a more complete plan. She heard the guards then, laughing in a side room, and paced over to peer inside. They were playing bones. Miralda went to the larder door, a hatch, really, that led to the outside wall of the castle. There wasn't much room among the rocks out there, especially if the tide was in, which it was, but it would have to do. Unlocking it as well, the woman went to the trap door and gently pulled it open. Slipping down to the dirty tunnels, she walked barefoot in the slop, hiking her dressing gown up so that it would carry no revealing stains. Wulfgar awoke to sounds of a key in the lock of his cell door, and a thin flickering light outside in the corridor. Having lost all track of time in the dark, he thought the morning of his torture had arrived. How surprised he was to find Lady Miralda staring in at him through the bars of his locked cell. "Can you forgive me?" she whispered, glancing over her shoulder nervously. Wulfgar just gaped at her.
"I didn't know he'd come after you," the woman explained. "I thought he'd let it go and I'd be..."
"Safe," he finished for her. "You thought your child would be safe." Now it was Miralda's turn for an incredulous stare. "Why have you come?" Wulfgar asked.
"You could have killed us," she replied. "Me and Liam on the road, I mean. Or done as they said you done."
"As you said I did," Wulfgar reminded.
"You could have let your friend have his way on the road. Could have let Liam die," Miralda went on. "I'm owing you this much, at least."
To Wulfgar's astonishment, she turned the key in the lock.
"Up the ladder and to the left, then through the larder," she explained. "The way's clear."
She lit another candle and left it for him, then turned and ran off. Wulfgar gave her a lead, not wanting to catch up to her, for he didn't want her implicated if he were caught. Outside the cell, he pulled a metal sconce from the wall and used it to batter the lock as quietly as he could to make it look as though he had broken out of his own accord. Then he moved down the corridors to the ladder and up into the kitchen. He too heard the guards arguing and rolling bones in a nearby room, so he couldn't similarly destroy the locks and bars up here. He relocked and barred the trap door. Let them think he'd found some magical assistance. Going straight through the larder, as Miralda had bade him, Wulfgar squeezed through the small door, a tight fit indeed, and found a precarious perch on wet rocks outside at the base of the castle. The stones were worn and smooth.
Wulfgar couldn't hope to scale it. Nor was there any apparent way around the corner, for the tide was crashing in. Wulfgar leaped into the cold water. Hiding in the kitchen, Miralda nodded as Wulfgar heightened her ruse by securing the trap door. She similarly locked the larder, washed all signs of her subterranean adventure from her feet, and padded quietly back to return the keys to Steward Temegast's room without further incident. Miralda was back in her bed soon after, the terrible demons of guilt, some of them at least, banished at last. The breeze off the water was chill, but Morrick was still sweating under the heavy folds of his latest disguise as an old washerwoman. He stood behind a stone wall near the entrance to the short bridge leading to Castle Auk. "Why did they put the thing on an island?" the rogue muttered disgustedly, but of course his own current troubles answered the question. A lone guard leaned on the wall above the huge castle gate. The man was very likely half asleep, but Mora could see no way to get near to him. The bridge was well lit, torches burning all the night long from what he had heard, and it offered no cover whatsoever. He would have to swim to the castle. Morrick looked at the dark waters doubtfully. He wouldn't have much of a disguise left after crossing through that, if he even made it. Morrick wasn't a strong swimmer, and didn't know the sea or what monsters might lurk beneath the dark waves. Morrick realized then and there that his time with Wulfgar was at its end. He would go to the place of torture in the morning, he decided, but probably only to say farewell, for it was unlikely he could rescue the man there without jeopardizing himself. No, he decided. He wouldn't even attend. What good might it bring? He muttered. It could even bring disaster for Morrick if the wizard who had caught Wulfgar was there and recognized him. Better that I remember Wulfgar from our times of freedom. Farewell, my big friend, Morrick said aloud sadly. I go now back to Luskin. Morrick paused as the water churned at the base of the wall. A large dark form began crawling from the surf. The rogue's hand went to his sword. Morrick? Wulfgar asked, his teeth chattering from the icy water. What are you doing here? I could ask the same of you, the rogue cried, delighted and astounded all at once. I, of course, came to rescue you, the cocky rogue added, bending to take Wolfgar's arm and help pull the man up beside him. This will require a lot of explaining, but come, let us be fast on our way. Wulfgar wasn't about to argue. I shall have every guard in this place executed! Lord Feringel fumed when he learned of the escape the next morning, the morning he was planning to exact his revenge upon the barbarian. The guard shrank back, fearing Lord Feringel would attack him then and there, and indeed, it seemed as if the young man would charge him from his chair. Miralda grabbed him by the arm, settling him. Calm, my lord, she said. Calm? Lord Feringel balked. Who failed me? He yelled at the guard. Who shall pay in Wulfgar's stead? None, Miralda answered before the stammering guard could begin to reply. Feringel looked at her incredulously. Anyone you harm will be because of me, the woman explained. I'll have no blood on my hands. You'd only be making things worse. The young lord calmed somewhat and sat back, staring at his wife, at the woman he wanted above all else to protect. After a moment's thought, a moment of looking into that beautiful, innocent face, Feringel nodded his agreement. Search all the lands, he instructed the guard, and the castle again from dungeon to parapet. Return him to me alive. Beads of sweat on his forehead, the guard bowed and ran out of the room. Fear not, my love, Lord Feringal said to Meralda.
I shall recall the wizard and begin the search anew. The barbarian shall not escape.
Please, my lord, Meralda begged. Don't summon the wizard again, or any other.
That raised a few eyebrows, including Priscilla's and Temegast's.
I'm wanting it all done, she explained. It's done, I say, and on the road behind me. I'm not wanting to look back ever again. Let the man go and die in the mountains, and let us look ahead to our own life, to when you might be siring children of our own.
Feringal continued to stare, unblinking. Slowly, very slowly, his head nodded, and Meralda relaxed back in her chair. Steward Temegast watched it all with growing certainty. He knew, without doubt, that Meralda was the one who had freed the barbarian. The wise old man, suspicious since seeing the woman's reaction when Wulfgar had first been dragged before her, had little trouble in understanding why. He resolved to say nothing, for it was not his place to inflict unnecessary pain on his lord. In any event, the child would be put out of the way, and in no line of ascension. But Temegast was far from easy with it all, especially after he looked at Priscilla, and saw her wearing an expression that might have been his own. She was always suspicious, that one, and Temegast feared she was harboring his same doubts about the child's heritage. Though Temegast felt it not his place to inflict unnecessary pain, Priscilla Auk seemed to revel in just that sort of thing. The road to which Meralda had referred was far from clear in either direction.
Chapter 24 Winter's Pause.
This is our chance, Wulfgar explained to Morik. The pair were crouched behind a shielding wall of stone on a mountainside above one of the many small villages on the southern side of the spine of the world. Morik looked at his friend and shook his head, giving a less than enthusiastic sigh. Not only had Wulfgar refrained him from the bottle on the 2 10-days since their return from Orkney, but had forbidden either of them to engage in any more highwayman activities. The season was getting late, turning toward winter, which meant a nearly constant stream of caravans as the last merchants returned from Icewind Dale. The seasonal occupants of the northern stretches left then as well, the men and women who went to 10 towns to fish for the summers, then rolled their wagons back to Luskin when the season ended. Wulfgar had made it clear to Morik that their thieving days were over. So here they were, overlooking a small, incredibly boring village they'd learned was expecting some sort of orc or goblin attack.
"They will not attack from below," Wulfgar remarked, pointing to a wide field east of the village on the same height as the higher buildings. "From there," Wulfgar explained.
"That's where they've constructed their wall and best defenses," Morik replied, as if that should settle it all. They believed that the coming band of monsters numbered less than a score, and while there weren't more than half that number in the town, Morik didn't see any real problems here.
"More may come down from above," Wulfgar reasoned. "The villagers might be sorely pressed if attacked from two sides."
"You're looking for an excuse," Morik accused. Wulfgar stared at him curiously. "An excuse to get into the fight," the rogue clarified, which brought a smile to Wulfgar's face. "Unless it's against merchants," Morik glumly added. Wulfgar held his calm and contented expression.
"I wish to battle deserving opponents," he said.
"I know many peasants who would argue that merchants are more deserving than goblin kind," Morik replied.
Wulfgar shook his head,
in no mood and with no time to sit and ponder the philosophical points. They saw the movement beyond the village, the approach of monsters, Wulfgar knew, of creatures the barbarian could cut down without remorse or regard. A score of orcs charged wildly across the field, rushing past the ineffective arrow volleys from the villagers.
"Go and be done with it," Morik said, starting to rise.
Wulfgar, a student of such attacks, held him down and turned his gaze up the slopes to where a huge boulder soared down, smashing the side of one building.
"There's a giant above," Wulfgar whispered, already starting his circle up the mountain. "Perhaps more."
"So that is where we shall go," Morik grumbled with resignation, though he obviously doubted the wisdom of such a course. Another rock soared down, then a third. The giant was lifting a fourth when Wulfgar and Morik turned a bend in the trail and slipped between a pair of boulders, spotting the behemoth from behind. Wolfgar's hand axe bit into the giant's arm, and it dropped the boulder onto its own head. The giant bellowed and spun around to where Morik stood shrugging, slender sword in hand. Bellowing, the giant came at him in one long stride. Morik yelped and turned to flee back through the boulders. The giant came on in swift pursuit, but as it reached the narrow pass, Wulfgar leaped atop one of the boulders and brought his ordinary hammer in hard against the side of the behemoth's head, sending it staggering. By the time the dazed giant managed to look to the boulder, Wulfgar was already gone. Back on the ground, the barbarian rushed at the giant's side to smash its kneecap hard, then dashed back into the boulders. The giant ran in pursuit, clutching its bruised head, then its aching knee, then looking at the axe deep into its forearm. It changed direction suddenly, having had enough of this fight, and ran up the mountainside instead, back into the wilds of the spine of the world. Morik stepped from the boulders and offered his hand to Wulfgar. "A job well done," he congratulated him. Wulfgar ignored the hand.
"A job just begun," he corrected, sprinting down the mountainside toward the village and the battle being waged at the eastern barricade.
"You do love the fighting," Morik commented dryly after his friend. Sighing, he loped behind. Below, the battle at the barricade was practically at a standoff. With no orcs yet breaching the shielding wall, but few had taken any solid hits either. That changed abruptly when Wulfgar came down from on high, running full out across the field, howling at the top of his lungs. Leaping, soaring, arms outstretched, he crashed into four of the creatures, bearing them all to the ground. A frenzy of clubbing and stabbing, punching and kicking ensued. More orcs moved to join the fight, but in the end, bloody, battered, but smiling widely, Wulfgar was the only one to emerge alive. Rallied by his amazing assault and by the appearance of Morik, who had struck down another orc on his way down the slope, the villagers poured into the remaining raiding party. The routed creatures, the dozen who still could run, fled back the way they had come. By the time Morik got near Wulfgar, the barbarian was surrounded by villagers, patting him, cheering him, promising eternal friendship, offering him a place to live for the coming winter.
"You see?" Wulfgar said to Morik with a happy smile. "Easier than any work at the pass."
Wiping off his blade, the rogue eyed his friend skeptically. The fight had been easy, even more so than an optimistic Wulfgar had predicted. Morik, too, was quickly surrounded by appreciative villagers, including a couple of young and attractive women. A quiet winter of relaxation in front of a blazing hearth might not be so bad a thing. Perhaps he would hold off on his plans to return to Luskin after all. Meralda's first 3 months of married life had been wonderful. Not blissful, but wonderful, as she watched her mother grow strong and healthy for the first time in years. Even life at the castle was not as bad as she had feared. Priscilla was there, of course, never more than casually friendly and often glowering. But she'd made no move against Meralda. How could she, with her brother so obviously enamored of his wife? She, too, had grown to love her husband. That, combined with the sight of her healthy mother, made it a lovely autumn for the young woman, a time of things new, a time of comfort, a time of hope. But as winter deepened around Orkney, ghosts of the past began to creep into the castle. Jacka's child, growing large and kicking, reminded Meralda in no uncertain terms of her terrible lie. She found herself thinking more and more about Jacka Schooley. about her own moments of foolishness regarding him, and there had been many. She pondered the last moments of Jack's life, when he had cried out her name, had risked his entire existence for her. At the time, Miralda had convinced herself that it was out of jealousy for Lord Feringhal and not love. Now, with Jack's child kicking in her womb, and the inevitable haze brought by the passage of time, she wasn't so sure. Perhaps Jacka had loved her in the end. Perhaps the tingling they'd felt on their night of passion had also planted the seeds of deeper emotions that had only needed time to find their way through the harsh reality of a peasant's existence. More likely, her mood was just the result of winter's gloom playing on her thoughts, and on her new husband's as well. It didn't help that their lovemaking decreased dramatically as Miralda's belly increased in size. He came to her one morning when the snow was deep around the castle, and the wind howled through the cracks in the stone. Even as he began kissing her, he stopped and stared hard at her. Then he'd asked her an unthinkable question. What had it been like with the barbarian? If he had kicked her in the head, it would not have hurt so much, yet Miralda was not angry at her husband, could surely understand his doubts and fears, given her distant mood and the tangible evidence that she had been with another man. The woman told herself repeatedly that once the child was born and taken away, she and Feringhal would settle into a normal existence. In that time, when the obvious pressures were gone, they would come to love each other deeply. She could only hope that it all would not disintegrate in the months she had left carrying the child. Of course, as the tension grew between Feringhal and Miralda, so too did the scowls Priscilla shot Miralda's way. Power wrought of having Lord Feringhal wrapped around her little finger had given Miralda the upper hand in the constant silent war Priscilla waged against her. Growing thick with another man's child, she found that power waning. She didn't understand it, though, considering Priscilla's initial response to learning that she had been raped. Priscilla had even mentioned taking the child as her own, to raise away from the castle, as was often done in such situations. "You're uncommonly large for so early in the pregnancy," Priscilla remarked to her, on the same winter day that Feringhal had asked her about Wulfgar. It occurred to Miralda that the shrewish woman had obviously sensed the palpable tension between the couple. Priscilla's voice was uncommonly thick with suspicion and venom, which told Miralda that her sister-in-law was keeping close track of the passage of time. There would be trouble indeed when Miralda delivered a healthy, full-term baby only 7 months after the incident on the road. Yes, Priscilla would have questions. Miralda deflected the conversation by sharing her fears about the barbarian's size, that perhaps the child would tear her apart. That had silenced Priscilla briefly, but Miralda knew the truce wouldn't last and the questions would return. Indeed, as winter waned and Miralda's belly swelled, the whispers began throughout Orkney. Whispers about the child's due date. Whispers about the incident on the road. Whispers about the tragic death of Jacka Schooley. No fool. Miralda saw people counting on their fingers, saw the tension in her mother's face, though the woman wouldn't openly ask for the truth. When the inevitable happened, predictably, Priscilla proved the source of it.
"You will birth the child in the month of Chess," the woman said rather sharply, as she and Miralda dined with Stuart Temegast one cold afternoon.
The equinox was fast approaching, but winter hadn't released its grip on the land yet, a howling blizzard whipping the snow deep around the castle walls. Miralda looked at her skeptically.
"Mid-Chess," Priscilla remarked. "Or perhaps late in the month, or even early in the month of the storms."
"Do you sense a problem with the pregnancy?" Steward Temegast intervened.
Once again, Miralda recognized that the man was her ally. He too knew, or at least he suspected as much as Priscilla, yet he'd shown no hostility toward Miralda. She'd begun to regard Temegast as a father figure, but the comparison seemed even more appropriate when she thought back to the morning after her night with Jacka, when Doni Ganderlay had suspected the truth but had forgiven it in light of the larger sacrifice, the larger good.
"I sense a problem, all right," Priscilla replied,
somehow managing to convey through her tone that she meant no problem with the physical aspects of the pregnancy. Priscilla looked at Miralda and huffed, then threw down her napkin and rushed away, heading right up the stairs.
"What's she about?"
Miralda asked Temegast, her eyes fearful. Before he could respond, she had her answer when shouts rang out from upstairs. Neither of them could make out any distinct words, but it was obvious Priscilla had gone to speak with her brother.
"What should I do?"
Miralda started to say, but Temegast hushed her.
"Eat, my lady," he said calmly. "You must remain strong, for you've trials ahead."
Miralda understood the double meaning in those words.
"I'm certain you'll come through them as long as you keep your wits about you," the old man added with a comforting wink. "When it is all past, you will find the life you desire."
Miralda wanted to run over and bury her head on the man's shoulder, or to run out of the castle altogether, down the road to the warm and comfortable home Lord Feringhal had given to her family, and bury her face on her father's shoulder. Instead, she took a deep breath to steady herself, then did as Temegast suggested, and ate her meal. The snow came early and deep that year. Morric would have preferred Luskin, but he'd come to see Wulfgar's point in bringing them to this village refuge. There was plenty of work to do, particularly after the snowfalls when the grounds had to be cleared and defensible berm built, but Morric managed to avoid most of it by feigning an injury from the battle that had brought them here. Wulfgar, though, went at the work with relish, using it to keep his body so occupied he hadn't time to think or dream. Still, Ertu found him in that village, as he had in every place Wulfgar went, every place he would ever go. Now, instead of hiding in a bottle from the demon, the barbarian met those memories head-on, replayed the events, however horrible, and forced himself to admit that it had happened, all of it, and that he had faced moments of weakness and failure. Many times Wulfgar sat alone in the dark corner of the room he had been given, trembling, wet with cold sweat, and with tears he could hold back no longer. Many times he wanted to run to Morric's inexhaustible supply of potent liquor, but he did not. He growled and he cried out, and yet he held fast his resolve to accept the past for what it was and to somehow move beyond it. Wulfgar didn't know where he had found the strength and determination, but he suspected it had laid dormant within him, summoned when he'd witnessed the courage Miralda had displayed to free him. She'd had so much more to lose than he, and yet she had rejuvenated his faith in the world. He knew now that his fight with Ertu would continue until he had honestly won, that he could hide in a bottle, but not forever. They fought another battle around the turn of the year, a minor skirmish with another band of orcs. The villagers had seen the attack coming and had prepared the battlefield, pouring melted snow over the field of approach. When the orcs arrived, they came skidding in on sheets of ice that left them floundering in the open while archers picked them off. The unexpected appearance of a group of Luskin soldiers, who had lost their way on patrol, did more to distress Wulfgar and Morric and shatter their idyllic existence than that battle. Wulfgar was certain at least one of the soldiers recognized the pair from Prisoner's Carnival, but either the soldiers said nothing to the villagers, or the villagers simply didn't care. The pair heard no tremors of unrest after the soldiers departed. In the end, it was the quietest winter Wulfgar and Morric had ever known, a needed respite. The season turned to spring, though the snow remained thick, and the pair began to lay their future plans.
"No more highwaymen," Wulfgar reminded Morric one quiet night halfway through the month of Chess.
"No," the rogue agreed. "I don't miss the life."
"What then for Morric?"
"Back to Luskin, I'm afraid," the rogue said. "My home, ever my home."
"And your disguise will keep you safe?"
Wulfgar asked with genuine concern. Morik smiled. The folk have short memories, my friend, he explained, silently adding that he hoped that Drow had short memories as well, for returning to Luskan meant abandoning his mission to watch over Wulfgar. Since we were exported, they have no doubt sated their bloodthirst on 100 unfortunates at Prisoner's Carnival. My disguise will protect me from the authorities, and my true identity will again grant me the respect needed on the streets.
Wulfgar nodded, not doubting Morik in the least. Out here in the wilds, the rogue was not nearly as impressive as on the streets of Luskan, where few could match his wiles.
And what for Wulfgar?
Morik asked, surprised by the honest concern on his own voice.
Icewind Dale? Morik asked. Friends of old?
The barbarian shook his head, for he simply didn't know the road ahead of him. He would have dismissed that possibility with hardly a thought, but he considered it now. Was he ready to return to the side of the companions of the hall, as he, Drizzt, Brunner, Catti Bree, Guinevar, and Regis had once been called? Had he escaped the demon and the demon bottle? Had he come to terms with Ertu and the truth of his imprisonment?
No, he answered, and left it at that, wondering if he would ever again meet the gazes of his former friends.
Morik nodded, though a bit dismayed for his own reasons. He didn't want Wulfgar to return to Luskan with him. Disguising the huge man would be difficult enough, but it was more than that. Morik didn't want Wulfgar to be caught by the dark elves.
"She is playing you for a fool, and all of Orkney knows it, Ferry,"
Priscilla screamed at her brother.
"Don't call me that," he snapped, pushing past her, looking for distraction from the subject. "You know I hate it."
Priscilla would not let it go.
"Can you deny the stage of her pregnancy?" she pressed. "She will give birth in a 10-day.
"The barbarian was a large man," Feringel growled. "The child will be large, and that is what is deceiving you."
"The child will be average," Priscilla retorted, "as you shall learn within the month."
Her brother started to walk away.
"I'll wager he'll be a pretty thing with the curly brown hair of his father."
That brought Feringel spinning around, glaring at her.
"His dead father,"
the woman finished, not backing down an inch. Lord Feringel crossed the few feet separating them in one stride and slapped his sister hard across the face. Horrified by his own actions, he fell back, holding his face in his hands.
"My poor cuckolded brother,"
Priscilla replied to that slap, glaring at him above the hand she had brought to her bruise.
"You will learn."
With that, she stalked from the room. Lord Feringel stood there, motionless for a long, long time, trying hard to steady his breathing. 3 days after their discussion, the weather had warmed enough to bring about a thaw, allowing Morik and Wulfgar to depart the village. The villagers were unhappy to see them go, especially because the thaw signaled the time of renewed monster attacks. The pair, particularly impatient Morik, would hear none of their pleas.
"Perhaps I will return to you," Wulfgar remarked,
and he was thinking that he might indeed, once he and Morik had gone their own ways outside of Luskan. Where else might the barbarian go, after all? The road out of the foothills was slow and so muddy and treacherous that the pair often had to walk, leading their horses carefully. Once the mountains gave way to the flatter plain just north of Luskan, they found the going relatively easy. "You still have the wagon and the supplies we left at the cave," Morik remarked. Wulfgar realized the rogue was beginning to feel a pang of guilt about leaving him.
"The cave did not remain empty throughout the winter, I'm sure," the barbarian remarked. "Not so many supplies left, I would guess."
"Then take the belongings of the present occupants," Morik replied with a wink. "Giants, perhaps. Nothing for Wulfgar to fear." That brought a smile to both their faces, but they didn't hold.
You should have stayed in the village, Morrig reasoned.
You can't go back to Luskin with me, so the village seems as good a place as any while you decide your course.
They'd come to a fork in the road. One path headed south to Luskin, the other to the west.
When Morrig turned to regard Wulfgar, he found the man staring out that second course, back toward the small fiefdom where he had been imprisoned, where Morrig, to hear Morrig tell it, had rescued him from a torturous death.
Plotting revenge? The rogue asked.
Wulfgar looked at him curiously, then caught on.
Hardly, he replied. I am wondering the fate of the lady of the castle.
The one who wrongly accused you of raping her?
Morrig asked. Wulfgar shrugged, as if not wanting to concede that point.
She was with child, he explained, and very much afraid.
You believe she cuckolded her husband? Morrig asked.
Wulfgar wrinkled his lips and nodded.
So she offered your head to protect her reputation, Morrig said derisively. Typical noble lady.
Wulfgar didn't reply, but he wasn't seeing things quite that way. The barbarian understood that she had never intended for him to be caught, but rather that he should remain a distant and mysterious solution to her personal problems. It was understandable, if not honorable.
She must have had the babe by now, he mumbled to himself. I wonder how she fared when they saw it, and realized the child couldn't be mine.
Morrig recognized Wulfgar's tone, and it worried him.
I'll not have to wonder your fate if you go back to determine hers, Morrig dryly remarked. You couldn't get into that town without being recognized.
Wulfgar nodded, not disagreeing, but he was smiling all the while, a look that was not lost on Morrig.
But you could, he said.
Morrig spent a long while studying his friend. If my road was not Luskin, he replied.
A road of your own making, and with no appointments needing prompt attention, said Wulfgar.
Winter is not yet gone. We took a chance in coming down from the foothills. Another storm might descend at any time, burying us deep.
Morrig continued to protest, but Wulfgar could tell by the rogue's tone that he was considering it.
The storms are not so bad south of the mountains.
Morrig scoffed.
This last favor? Wulfgar asked.
Why do you care? Morrig argued. The woman nearly had you killed, and in a manner horrible enough to have satisfied the crowd at Prisoner's Carnival.
Wulfgar shrugged, not honestly sure of that answer himself, but he wasn't about to back down.
A last act of friendship between us two, he prodded, that we might properly part in the hopes of seeing each other again.
Morrig scoffed again.
One last fight with me at your side is all you're after, he said half-humorously. Admit it, you're nothing as a fighter without me.
Even Wulfgar had to laugh at Morrick's irony, but he followed it up with a plaintive expression.
Oh, lead on, Morrig grumbled, conceding as Wulfgar knew he would. I will play the part of Lord Brandenburg yet again. I only hope that Brandenburg was not connected with your escape, and that our common departure times were seen by Feringhal as pure coincidence.
If captured, I will honestly tell Lord Feringhal that you played no part in my escape,
Wulfgar said, a crooked smile showing under his thick winter beard.
You have no idea how the promise comforts me, Morrig said wryly, as he pushed his friend ahead of him toward the west, toward trouble in Orkney.
Chapter 25 Epiphany 2 days later, Morrig's predicted snowstorm did come on, but its fury was somewhat tempered by the late season, leaving the road passable. The two riders plodded along, taking care to stay on the trail. They made good time, despite the foul weather, with Wolfgar driving them hard. Soon they came to a region of scattered farmhouses and stone cottages. Now the storm proved to be their ally, for few curious faces showed in the heavily curtained windows, and through the snow, wrapped in thick skins, the pair were hardly recognizable. Soon after, Wolfgar waited in a sheltered overhang along the foothills, while Morik, Lord Brandeburg of Waterdeep, rode down into the village. The day turned late. The storm continued, but Morik didn't return. Wolfgar left his shelter to move to a vantage point that would afford him a view of Castle Auk. He wondered if Morik had been discovered. If so, should he rush down to find some way to aid his friend? Wolfgar gave a chuckle. It was more likely that Morik had stayed on at the castle for a fine meal and was warming himself before the hearth at that very moment. The barbarian retreated again to his shelter to brush down his horse, telling himself to be patient. Finally, Morik did return, wearing a grim expression indeed. "I was not met with friendly hugs," he explained.
"Your disguise did not hold?"
"It's not that," said the rogue. "They thought me Lord Brandeburg, but just as I feared, they considered it a bit odd that I disappeared at the same time you did." Wolfgar nodded. They had discussed that very possibility.
"Why did they let you leave if they were suspicious?"
"I convinced them it was but a coincidence," he reported. "Else why would I return to Orkney? Of course, I had to share a large meal to persuade them."
"Of course," Wolfgar agreed archly, his tone dry. "What of Lady Miralda and her child? Did you see her?"
the barbarian prompted. Morik pulled the saddle from his horse and began brushing his own beast down as if preparing again for the road. "It is time for us to be gone," he replied flatly. "Far from here."
"What news?" Wolfgar pressed, now truly concerned.
"We have no allies here, and no acquaintances even, in any mood to entertain visitors," Morik replied. "Better for all that Wolfgar Morik and Lord Brandeburg put this wretched little pretend fiefdom far behind their horses' tails." Wolfgar leaned over and grabbed the rogue's shoulder, roughly turning him from his work on the horse.
"The Lady Miralda," he demanded.
"She birthed a child late last night," Morik admitted reluctantly. Wolfgar's eyes grew wide with trepidation. "Both survived," Morik quickly added. "For now." Pulling away, the rogue went back to his work with renewed vigor. Feeling Wolfgar's eyes on him expectantly, Morik sighed and turned back. "Look, she told them that you had ravished her," he reminded his friend. "It seems likely that she was covering an affair," Morik reasoned. "She lied, condemning you to hide her own betrayal of the young lord." Again the knowing nod, for this was no news to Wolfgar. Morik looked at him hard, surprised that he was not shaken somewhat by the blunt expression of all that had occurred, surprised that he was showing no anger at all, despite the fact that, because of the woman, he had been beaten and nearly brutally executed. "Well, now there is doubt concerning the heritage of the child," Morik explained. "The birth was too soon. Considering our encounter with the girl on the road, and there are those within the village and castle who do not believe her tale." Wolfgar gave a profound sigh.
"I suspected as much would happen."
"I heard some talk of a young man who fell to his death on the day of the wedding, between Lord Feringhal and Miralda. A man who died crying out for her."
"Lord Feringhal believes he's the one who cuckolded him?"
Wolfgar asked. "Not specifically," Morik replied. "Since the child was surely conceived before the wedding. Even if it had been your child, that would have been so. But he knows, of course, that his wife once lay with another. And now he may be thinking that it was of her own volition and not something forced upon her on a wild road."
"A ravished woman is without blame," Wolfgar put in, for it all made sense.
"While a cheating woman," Morik added ominously. Wolfgar gave another sigh and walked out of the shelter, staring again at the castle.
"What will happen to her?" he called back to Morik.
The marriage will be declared invalid, surely, Morik answered, having lived in human cities long enough to understand such things.
And the Lady Miralda will be sent from the castle? The barbarian said hopefully.
If she's fortunate, she'll be banished from Feringal Auk's domain with neither coin nor title, Morik replied.
And if she's unfortunate? Wulfgar asked.
Morik winced. Noblemen's wives have been put to death for such offenses, the worldly rogue replied.
What of the child?
An increasingly agitated Wulfgar demanded. The images of his own horrible past experiences began edging in at the corners of his consciousness. If fortunate, banished, Morik replied. Though I fear such an action will take more good fortune than the banishment of the woman. It is very complicated. The child is a threat to Auk's domain, but also to his pride.
They would kill a child, a helpless babe?
Wulfgar asked, his teeth clenched tightly as those awful memories began to creep ever closer. The rage of a betrayed lord cannot be underestimated, Morik answered grimly. Lord Feringal cannot show weakness, else risk the loss of the respect of his people and the loss of his lands. Complicated and unpleasant business all. Now let us be gone from this place. Wulfgar was indeed gone, storming out from under the overhang and stalking down the trails. Morik was quick to catch him. What will you do? The rogue demanded, recognizing Wolfgar's resolve.
I don't know, but I've got to do something,
Wulfgar said, increasing his pace with a level of his agitation, while Morik struggled to keep up. As they entered the village, the storm again proved an ally, for no peasants were around. Wolfgar's eyes were set on the bridge leading to Castle Auk.
Give the child away as you planned, Steward Temegast suggested to the pacing Lord Feringal.
It is different now, the young man stammered, slapping his fists helplessly at his sides. He glanced over at Priscilla. His sister was sitting comfortably, her smug smile a reminder that she'd warned him against marrying a peasant in the first place.
"We don't know that anything has changed,"
Temegast said, always the voice of reason. Priscilla snorted. "Can you not count?" she asked.
"The child could be early," Temegast protested.
"As well-formed a babe as ever I've seen," said Priscilla. She was not early, Temegast, and you know it.
Priscilla looked straight at her brother, reiterating the talk that had been buzzing around Castle Auk all day.
The child was conceived midsummer, she said, before the supposed attack on the road.
How can I know for sure? Lord Feringal wailed. His hands tore at the sides of his pants, an accurate reflection of the rending going on inside his mind.
How can you not know? Priscilla shot back. You've been made a fool to the mirth of all the village. Will you compound that now with weakness?
You still love her,
Steward Temegast cut in.
Do I?
Lord Feringal said, so obviously torn and confused. I don't know any more.
Send her away, then, the steward offered. Banish her with the child.
That would make the villagers laugh all the harder, Priscilla observed sourly. Do you want the child to return in a score of years and take your kingdom from you? How many times have we heard of such tales?
Temegast glared at the woman. Such things had occurred, but they were far from common.
What am I to do, then?
Lord Feringal demanded of his sister.
A trial of treason for the whore,
Priscilla answered matter-of-factly.
And a swift and just removal of the result of her infidelity.
Removal?
Feringal echoed skeptically.
She wants you to kill the child,
Temegast explained archly.
Throw it to the waves,
Priscilla supplied feverishly, coming right out of her chair.
If you show no weakness now, the folk will still respect you.
"They will hate you more if you murder an innocent child," Temek asked, said angrily, more to Priscilla than Lord Feringal.
"Innocent?"
Priscilla balked, as if the notion were preposterous.
"Let them hate you,"
she said to Lord Feringal, moving her face to within an inch of his.
"Better that than to laugh at you. Would you suffer the bastard to live, a reminder then of he who lay with Miralda before you?"
"Shut your mouth," Lord Feringal demanded, pushing her back. Priscilla didn't back down.
"Oh, but how she purred in the arms of Jack Askuli," she said.
And her brother was trembling so much that he couldn't even speak through his grinding teeth.
"I'll wager she arched that pretty back of hers for him,"
Priscilla finished lewdly. Feral, sputtering sounds escaped the young lord. He grabbed his sister by the shoulders with both hands and flung her aside. She was smiling the whole time, satisfied, for the enraged lord shoved past Temegast and ran for the stairs. The stairs that led to Miralda and her bastard child.
"It's guarded, you know,"
Morik reminded him, yelling, though his voice sounded thin in the howling wind. Wulfgar wouldn't have heeded the warning anyway. His eyes were set on Castle Auk, and his line to the bridge didn't waver. He pictured the mounds of snow as the spine of the world, as that barrier between the man he had been and the victim he had become. Now, his mind free at last of all influence of potent liquor, his strength of will granting him armor against those awful images of his imprisonment, Wulfgar saw the choices clearly before him. He could turn back to the life he had found, or he could press on, could cross that emotional barrier, could fight and claw his way back to the man he once was. The barbarian growled and pressed on against the storm. He even picked up speed as he reached the bridge, a fast walk, a trot, then a full run as he picked his course, veering to the right, where the snow had drifted along the railing and the castle's front wall. Up the drift Wulfgar went, crunching into snow past his knees, but growling and plowing on, maintaining his momentum. He leaped from the top of the drift, reaching with an outstretched arm to hook his hammer's head atop the wall. Wulfgar heard a startled call from above as it caught loudly against the stone, but he hardly slowed, great muscles cording and tugging, propelling him upward where he rolled around, slipping right over the crenellated barrier. He landed nimbly on his feet on the parapet within, right between two dumbfounded guards, neither of them holding a weapon as they tried to keep their hands warm. Morik rushed up the same path as Wulfgar, using agile moves to scale the wall nearly as fast as his friend had done with brute strength. Still, by the time he got to the parapet, Wulfgar was already down in the courtyard, storming for the main keep. Both guards were down, too, lying on the ground and groaning, one holding his jaw, the other curled up and clutching his belly.
"Secure the door!"
one of the guards managed to cry out. The main door cracked open then, a man peeking out. Seeing Wulfgar bearing in, he tried to close it fast. Wulfgar got there just before it slammed, pushing back with all his strength. He heard the man calling frantically for help, felt the greater push as another guard joined the first, both leaning heavily.
"I'm coming too," Morik called, "though only the gods know why."
His thoughts far away, in a dark and smoky place where his child's last terrified cry rent the air. Wulfgar didn't hear his friend, didn't need him. Bellowing, he shoved with all his strength until the door flew in, tossing the two guards like children against the back wall of the foyer.
"Where is she?"
Wulfgar demanded, and even as he spoke, the foyer's other door swung open. Liam Woodgate appeared, rushing in with sword in hand.
"Now you pay, dog!"
the coachman cried, coming in fast and hard, stabbing a feint. Pulling the blade in, he sent it into a sudden twirl, then feigned a sidelong slice, turning it over again and coming straight in with a deadly thrust. Liam was good, the best fighter in all of Orkney, and he knew it. That's why it was difficult to understand how Wulfgar's hammer came out so fast to hook over Liam's blade and take it safely wide of the mark. How could the huge barbarian turn so nimbly on his feet to get within reach of Liam's sword? How was he able to come around perfectly, sending his thick arm spiking up under Liam's sword arm? Liam knew his own skill, and so it was even harder for him to understand how his clever attack had been turned against him so completely. Liam knew only that his face was suddenly pressed against the stone wall, his arms pulled tight behind his back, and the snarling barbarian's breath was on his neck.
"Lady Miralda and the child," Wulfgar asked. "Where are they?" "I die afore I tell you," Liam declared.
Wulfgar pressed in. The poor old gnome thought he surely would die, but Liam held his determined tongue and growled against the pain. Wulfgar spun him around and slammed him once, then slammed him again when he managed somehow to hold his feet, launching him over to the floor. Liam nearly tripped up Morik, who skipped right on by through the other door and into the castle proper. Wulfgar was right behind him. They heard voices, and Morik led the way, crashing through a set of double doors and into a comfortable sitting room.
"Lord Brandenburg?"
Lady Priscilla asked. She squealed in fright and fell back in her chair as Wulfgar followed the rogue into the room.
"Where is Lady Miralda and the child?" he roared. "Haven't you caused enough harm?" Steward Temegast demanded, moving to stand boldly before the huge man.
Wulfgar looked him right in the eye.
"Too much," he admitted. "But none here."
That set Temegast back on his heels.
"Where are they?" Wulfgar demanded, rushing up to Priscilla.
"Thieves! Murderers!"
Priscilla cried, swooning. Wulfgar locked stares with Temegast. To Wolfgar's surprise, the old steward nodded and motioned toward the staircase. Even as he did, Priscilla Auk ran full out up the staircase.
"Do you have any idea what you've done to me?" Feringel asked Miralda, standing by the edge of her bed, the infant girl lying warm beside her.
"To us. To Orkney."
"I beg you to try to understand, my lord," the woman pleaded.
Feringel winced, pounding his fists into his eyes. His visage steeled, and he reached down and plucked the babe from her side. Miralda started up toward him, but she hadn't the strength and fell back on the bed.
"What are you about?"
Feringel strode over to the window and pulled the curtain aside.
"My sister says I should toss it to the waves upon the rocks," he said through teeth locked in a tight grimace, "to rid myself of the evidence of your betrayal."
"Please, Feringel, do not," Miralda began.
"It's what they're all saying, you know,"
Feringel said, as if she hadn't spoken. He blinked his eyes and wiped his nose with his sleeve.
"The child of Jackus Schooley."
"My lord,"
she cried, her red-rimmed eyes fearful.
"How could you?"
Feringel yelled, then looked from the baby in his hands to the open window. Miralda started to cry.
"The cuckold. And now the murderer."
Feringel muttered to himself as he moved closer to the window.
"You have damned me, Miralda," he cursed.
Holding out his arms, he moved the crying baby to the opening. Then he looked down at the innocent little girl and pulled her back close, his tears mixing with the baby's.
"Damned me, I say,"
he cried, and the breath came in labored, forced gasps. Suddenly, the door to the room flew open, and Lady Priscilla burst in. She slammed it shut and secured the bolt behind her. Surveying the scene quickly, she ran to her brother, her voice shrill.
"Give it to me!"
Lord Feringel rolled his shoulder between the child and Priscilla's grasping hands.
"Give it to me!"
the woman shrieked again, and a tussle for the baby ensued. Wulfgar went in fast pursuit, taking the curving staircase four steps at a stride. He came to a long hallway lined with rich tapestries, where he ran into yet another bumbling castle guard. The barbarian slapped the prone man's sword away, caught him by the throat, and lifted him into the air. Morik skittered past him, going from door to door, ear cocked. Then he stopped abruptly at one. "They're in here," he announced. He grabbed the handle, only to find it locked.
"The key,"
Wulfgar demanded, giving the guard a shake. The man grabbed the barbarian's iron arm.
"No key,"
he gasped breathlessly. Wulfgar looked about to strangle him, but the thief intervened. Don't bother, I'll pick the lock, he said, going fast to his belt pouch.
Don't bother. I have a key, Wulfgar cried.
Morik looked up to see the barbarian bearing down on him, the guard still dangling at the end of one arm. Seeing his intent, Morik skittered out of the way as Wulfgar hurled the hapless man through the wooden door.
A key, the barbarian explained.
Well thrown, Morik commented.
I have had practice, explained Wulfgar,
thundering past the dazed guard to leap into the room. Meralda sat up on the bed, sobbing, while Lord Feringhal and his sister stood by the open window, the babe in Feringhal's arms. He was leaning toward the opening, as if he meant to throw the child out. Both siblings and Meralda turned stunned expressions Wulfgar's way, and their eyes widened even more when Morik crashed in behind.